Today is Tuesday, November 20th, the year 2001. We're in East Lansing, Michigan. I'm Jeff Charnley, along with Fred Honart, interviewing former MSU head football coach Frank Muddy Waters for the MSU Oral History Project for the sesquicentennial to be commemorated in 2005.
Don't forget I was also an ex-player.
That's right. Coach Waters, you can see we've got a tape recorder here. Do you give us permission to record this interview?
That's right.
Okay. I'd like to start with some questions about your personal and family background. Where were you born and raised, and where did you go to school prior to coming to college?
Well, I was born in Chico, California, and I was raised basically in Bridgeport, Connecticut, although I lived several other places before I settled there. And I went to the Choate Prep School in Wallingford, Connecticut, and graduated from there and went into the service. Won the war, and then came to Michigan State.
What branch of the service did you?
I was in the Air Corps.
In the Air Corps. What were your duties?
I was a physical training instructor.
Okay. And what rank were you?
I was a sergeant.
And what were your years of service?
1943 to 46.
So all your time was in the States?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Did you play sports in high school?
Yes, I did. I went to two prep schools. I went to Pauling Prep in Pauling, New York, and played football and ran track. And I went to Choate School in Wallingford, Connecticut, and ran the same two sports.
Did you play football?
Oh, yes.
Yep. Who were your coaches in high school? Do you remember that?
Well, I had several coaches, Aaron Burr, let's see, I had so many of them, Turret Top, I can't remember, that was bald-headed guy, good coach, Herb Matledge, and I had J.J. Marr at Choate. I only had 1 year at Choate. And then I went into the service and played service ball with the 4th Air Force. And Johnny Baker was the coach. And then I came to Michigan State.
How was it that you came to choose Michigan State?
Well, I came here as a Air Corps student. And I just knew some people here, so I came back and decided I'd come here.
Was there anything about the campus that appealed to you when you?
Well, everything about the campus appealed to me, but originally I had an offer to see Fritz Kreisler in Michigan, and we set up an appointment. And when I went up there, he didn't make the appointment. So I got really ticked off and I came back to Michigan State and went in to see Charlie Bachman, and he said, well, why don't you come to Michigan State? I said, it's a deal. So I came to Michigan State and played 4 years here.
What was your position?
Fullback.
Did Coach Bachman know of you? Or?
I think he did, yeah. I think he did. Because he offered me a scholarship, so I knew that he knew of me. And then, of course, Charlie later took me to Hillsdale with him when he was coaching there and stayed 1 year, and I took over after that and stayed at Hillsdale for 21 years. And Charlie once made the statement that I was probably the closest player that he had ever coached, which was a real honor to me.
How would you describe his coaching style?
Well, Charlie, unfortunately, was back in the Newt Rockne days, and I think football had kind of passed him by a little bit. He was still running the old single wing stuff, and didn't quite keep up with the game. But he was a good coach, had a great success. The only Michigan coach at that time to beat Michigan 4 years in a row. So he had to have something on the ball.
Who were some of your teammates that you recall from that?
Well, they had Lynn Shadmore, Sonny Grandarius, Don Coleman, Ed Bagden, Don Mason, Pete Fusey. I could go on and on here.
maintained some contact with them?
Oh, yes, yes. Yeah, still do. We still meet and enjoy the games.
You were part of that large group of vets that came back.
Yes.
That came to campus. How would you describe campus life in the post-war?
Well, it was very unusual. There never would be another time like it. The freshmen were all veterans. Therefore, they were the leaders. And the upperclassmen were the followers. Of course, now it's progressed to the seniors are again the leading group.
Were there other vets on the football team?
Oh, yes. Yeah, we were almost all vets. Oh, okay. Yeah, almost all, entirely, practically. I think there was just one young kid who was just a freshman that made the team. And the rest of us were all vets.
What did you major in?
Physical education.
Did you, was it teaching or?
Teaching, coaching, yes.
Teaching, coaching. Besides Charlie Bachman, was there someone else that you worked with? When Charlie was the coach, was he the coach during your entire time, or?
Just one year.
Okay.
First year, and then I took over for 21 years.
Okay. Well, that was at Hillsdale, but I meant when you were a player. Did you?
Oh, I had Charlie just one year, and then I had Biggie Munn.
Okay.
His first 3 years.
Uh-huh. Could you talk a little bit about Biggie Munn?
Oh, Biggie was a great coach. I think right now he's underrated, but he was he was my epitome of a great coach. He had the know-how. He had the psychological approach that would inspire players to win. And I think he built a great program at Michigan State.
Was there any coaching technique in particular that you used that you first saw with him?
Well, I that's a hard one to answer, but. Yeah, I followed his basic philosophy, which was come on and give it your all. He would never come out and say this, but he made you feel it was the most important thing in college life, as in football. And I subscribed to that. I gave it the best I had, and so did most of the other players.
How would you say the students responded to the efforts of the football team at that time?
Very well. We had great support, and we had some great years, so they would naturally be with us.
Were there any games that in particular that stood out that were most memorable for you or your own experience?
Yeah. My most memorable game was against Santa Clara when I set the school record for a number of carries in a single game. That's the 31, which has since been broken, but it held up for 21 years, and I was pretty proud of that, and I enjoyed the game a lot.
What was it like playing Michigan during that time?
Pardon me?
What was it like to play against Michigan?
It was pretty tough. We never beat Michigan. We came close, but we never beat them. We got beat first year 55-0, second year 55-7, and then it was just a few points after that. But we closed the gap considerably.
Did you have any contact with President Hanna at that time?
Yes, I did. President Hanna knew just about everybody. He knew everybody's name, and I still marvel at the first time I met him. I had not yet played football. I was a freshman, and I was working on Berkey Hall, digging a ditch foundation, and the job superintendent brought him around and introduced him to the football players that were working. And I reached up, I'm covered with dust, and then I shook his hand, back to hand. I never saw him again until right at the beginning of the football season. I was coming out of the dining hall, and he was walking across the tarmac and talking with two businessmen, obviously, in business suits and so on. And I didn't know, he won't know me, so I just started to walk by, and he looked up and took a glance. He said, "Hi there, Waters, how are you?" And that's the kind of memory he had for names. He was fantastic. Wonderful man. I really admired him. A great speaker, a tremendous speaking voice. And
did he support the athletic program?
Oh, absolutely. got it started. I mean, he said that a good football team was the common ground for a good university. It was a sounding board for the university, and he supported it. He never missed a game that I can remember.
How did you feel about your studies here at Michigan State as an undergraduate?
Well, as long as I had to go to classes, they were tolerable. But I had a good education, and there was no hanky panky fixing grades or anything like that. You got what you earned, and I'm proud of that.
Was Jack Breslin on your teams?
I succeeded Jack.
Is that okay?
He graduated the year before I came, and he was fullback, and I took over when he left. Played 4 years. I knew Jack quite well. We were very good friends.
In the and you graduated in 49?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, I graduated in 50.
In 50, okay.
But my last year was 49 as a player.
Yeah. Were you caught up in the Korean War at all?
No.
The next year?
No. I didn't see any military service after my original.
What happened after graduation?
Pardon me?
What happened after graduation?
After graduation, I got a job at War Lake High School, and I stayed there for 2 years. Then I went to Albion High School. Then Charlie Bachman came down and said, "I'm thinking of getting back into coaching." Well, I knew the Pittsburgh Steelers were after him, and I said, "Charlie, you're 62 years old. You don't need that hassle." He said, "No." He said, This is just a small college, and I can go there and teach and not coach and not teach." And I said, "That's great. Are you going to take it?" He said, "Depends on you." I said, "Depends on me." He said, "Yeah, if you come as backfield coach, do all the recruiting, and be athletic director, I'll take the job. But if you won't, I won't come." Well, it was a big choice for me to make, because I wanted to be the head coach. That was my main objective. But I said, "I'll give it a try." Well, Charlie stayed 1 year, and then he left, and I took over.
This is at Hillsdale, right?
At Hillsdale, yeah.
What was it like to move from being a player at Michigan State to a coach at a school like Hillsdale?
I don't know. It was a transgression I made. I was proud of being a player at Michigan State and to have played for Biggie Munn and Charlie Bachman. And I utilized a lot of Biggie's philosophy as my own. And we had pretty good success. Won 34 games in a row.
Right.
And
what years were those?
Pardon me?
What years?
Oh, 19... Let's see, what was it? 1953 to 57, I think it was. 56, 57.
Were there any scholarships available at that time?
When I went to Hillsdale, there were none. And I had to do it the hard way. But then I got some scholarships after a while and was able to build a real strong program. But all I could give was tuition.
Right.
I couldn't give room and board until I went to Saginaw. At Saginaw, I got room and board. So I was pretty proud of what I accomplished with the situation the way it was.
What led you to go to Saginaw from Hillsdale?
The president left Hillsdale, and George Roach came in. And you know George, and I couldn't stomach the guy. To tell you the truth, I don't want to coach with this guy. In fact, he called me in. He said, "We're going to give up all scholarships and just go to recruiting students ordinarily that come to school." And I said, "George, you are in left field with the sun in your eyes." I said, you can't do that." He said, "Well, I think I can." Well, that's a big reason I left. But the alumni got so mad that they just bamboozled him with complaints. So shortly after I left, they reinstated the program with room and board in addition. So I said, "Well, the alumni can do it, they get up in the air." But it was a sad thing to leave, but I couldn't take the guy, and he's since proved he has feet of clay.
Yes, yes, he certainly.
What year was that you went to Saginaw?
Yeah. Oh, let's see.
Not meant to be a quiz. But
50. God, I don't remember right now.
We can look it up. Too.
Yeah, I can look it up sometime.
How did you find the change when you were at Saginaw from Hillsdale?
Change from Saginaw to...
From Hillsdale to Saginaw, what were the big changes that you noticed?
I had a lot more help. I had a lot more scholarship help. And... I wrote my own program. I was out here in left field, which is not usually a good thing to do, but I was over here and the faculty was over here. And I didn't really feel like I was part of the academic program like I did at Hillsdale. At Hillsdale, I was on the academic board. I was in on the planning of the programs and policies and procedures and so on. At Saginaw, I was an entity unto my own self, I guess.
How did you like it there?
Saginaw?
Yeah.
Oh, I like Saginaw. Yeah, I had a lot of good friends there. Good kids.
How is it that you were contacted as far as coming to Michigan State to replace Darryl Rogers?
Well, that was kind of unusual. I got a call from Doug Weaver. He had just become athletic director. And he said, "I want you to come down and see me." He offered me the job. I took it.
So you were rather surprised then by that.
Yeah, I was. I had the record to be well qualified for it, as over anybody else that I can think of. So I think, without having thought about it, I think I would have been very disappointed not to have at least been contacted. And then when I was offered the job, it was a big surprise. Not really, but it was a big surprise.
What was it like when you came here be head coach after having left as a player all those years?
It was kind of tough. I think about this for a minute. It's a little hazy. Let's see. I know I was very delighted to be here and to get the chance. I couldn't do everything I wanted to do. Thought I could that I could do, and I had a little interference with things I wanted to do and what I couldn't do. But I was very pleased to be here and wanted to do a lot better than I did. But we lost. My last year here, we lost, I think, 8 or 9 games by less than 20 points.
Right.
Or total.
No.
And we were close in everything, and being let go under those circumstances was not a very happy experience. I'm not very pleased with that. I thought I deserved a little better, but. Even Weaver admitted it later that he made a mistake letting me go. But it's too late then.
Going back to your hiring, one of the things I remember when I was at the university was the issue that you wanted to bring your son with you, and some people didn't want you to do that.
Well, I couldn't bring my son because of nepotism. And well, that was a hard blow, because he'd been with me for, I don't know, 17 years or something like that, and was my main assistant and knew everything. And Weaver said, you can't bring him because of nepotism. And later, in talking with Jack Breslin, he said, oh, I said, you should have called me. He says, there wouldn't have been any nepotism because he wasn't getting paid by you. So specifically, and there's no way he could make. See, they had just passed the anti-nepotism rule because one of the professors had hired his wife,
right,
and gave her some money or something like that, and so they passed the rule, and I got caught in that. But if I'd just known enough to see Jack Breslin, he could overcome that.
Yeah, I always thought that was so unfortunate, because whether it's your son or somebody else you're used to working with, it's a difficult situation.
Yeah, my wife cried all night. And Murky just quit coaching. But, he was a good assistant. We made a good pair.
How was it that you got the name Muddy?
Well, Johnny Pingle, who was our backfield coach when I was here at Michigan State, I had a good day in the mud. And he started calling me Muddy. And it just caught on from there. Everybody started calling me Muddy.
And how about your son? You mentioned he was...
Murky, yeah. Murky just says that's a spinoff of Muddy, I guess.
Where's your son now?
He's in Saginaw.
He stayed in Saginaw Valley?
No, he's in real estate.
Real estate, oh.
Doing very well.
Who were some of your players that you worked with while you were coaching here?
Well, probably the best one I ever had, or at least as good as any, was Howard Mudd, who was all pro for 4 years. And I had, I had so many of them. Let's see. Nate Clark. It's funny. I don't think I'm as outstanding. They're all my players.
Yeah. So you mentioned two,
those were some of the most outstanding. I had, I think, Nate Clark and Howard Mudd were probably the two of the best. Oh, I had a Chester Markle, kicker.
Yeah.
Held a world record 1 year for the longest field goal ever kicked, 62 yards. And then the very next day, Dempsey kicked one, the same distance as the Lions.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Sounds like we need some kickers like that.
Yes, we do.
Oh, he was a great kicker. Gee. And, you know, it's strange, but he'd come over from Poland and played 1 year in high school. And Duffy wanted him real bad. But he couldn't get him in because he couldn't pass the English exam. So I went to my dean. I said, I got to get this kid in. How can I do it? He said, well, tell me about it. I said, well, he just came over from Poland and couldn't pass the English. I said, well, there's your answer. We'll admit him as a foreign student and let him take English as a foreign language. And we got him in. And Duffy could have done the same thing. Somebody had given him the word on it.
But what was your relationship with Duffy? Did you have contact with him before you?
Oh, yeah, Duffy and I are great friends. We were just good friends. Yeah. And he wasn't nearly the coach Biggie Munn was, but he had a great staff. And he let them do most of the coaching. And he, you know, he took the credit as a head man, which is nothing wrong with that. But he couldn't hold a candle to Biggie. Biggie was a complete coach. I mean, he did everything that a coach would be doing. And Duffy was a storyteller, a little teller, humor stories, and everybody loved him. And then he had a good time. Well, you look at the guys he had. He had Evashevsky, Oh, the guy that went out to Arizona, Frank Kush, Chuck Fairbanks. He had some great coaches working for him. But he was smart enough to let them do the coaching. Mm-hmm. But he couldn't compare with Biggie. Just wasn't in the same league. Although he got probably more credit than Biggie, but those of us who played for him, all agree he wasn't Biggie's caliber.
What would you consider the high points of your being coach here at MSU?
My being coach at MSU?
The high points of
it. Getting fired.
I consider that a low point. Maybe it's a matter of perspective.
The high point, I don't know if there ever was one. No, we came close to beating Michigan. Didn't do it. The high point, I guess, was just getting there.
Going back to your playing days, when you started playing right after the war at Michigan State, how integrated was the team at that time, and what sort of change did you see as far as African American and minority students on the football team?
No problems. We were well integrated. Didn't have very many black players, but Don Coleman was well accepted, and there was any suggestion of resentment or whatever the word is I'm looking for.
What about when you went to play some other schools? Did you have any problems at all with
play
other schools?
Just once. We had Horace Smith, somebody called him a nigger, and that created a stir of resentment from our team. Other than that, there was no real animosity either way.
What was going on on campus at that time? Was the campus becoming more integrated as far as the
general? I can't recall any problems at all.
I just wondered about the role of the football team and that's that served as any type of model.
No, I don't recall any problems. I may have been some, but I don't recall them.
What was your approach toward recruiting?
What was what?
Your approach toward recruiting?
Recruiting? Get all you can get. I went after kids who had the academic talent as well as athletic. You don't win with dumbbells. And I always tried to get the smart kid.
Would you say that your tenure as head coach was affected by the probation and some of the things that happened in the